Hello and welcome to Dear Hank and John. It's a comedy podcast about death. We answer your questions, we provide you with dubious advice, and we bring you all the week's news from both Mars, which is a cold, dead rock in the vacuum of space, and AFC Wimbledon, which is the greatest fan-owned institution in the world. I am here today with the lovely Karen Hallian.
Hello.
Karen, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I am an artist, illustrator, and part-time Jedi. mostly the part-time is because I have kids, so I'll get back to my studies for Jedi training at a future date. I'm from Boston, and I do a lot of pop culture mashups, Star Wars, Disney, Doctor Who, and then I was lucky enough to work on Hank's Wizard School last year, and I did all of the art for that, which was an incredible experience.
You can find Karen at her Etsy store. She also has stuff at dftba.com, your friendly neighborhood e-tailer. And also, I should add that the game that she did the illustrations for, Wizard School, will be available soon for the Christmas holidays. So, usually at the beginning of the podcast, Karen, we talk about just how we're doing.
How we're doing.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little anxious just because usually I'm in my basement when I do this.
Are you really?
But other than that, I'm well.
There's a few people here.
Yeah, it's weird. Usually you're just comments.
Yeah.
It's weird to me that you have bodies. Somebody just got the first comment. Congratulations. That reminds me of my all-time favorite Hank joke. What did the YouTube commenter say when they finished fifth in the marathon? First. All right. We're going to skip the short poem for the day because I didn't prepare one. If you come to my thing later today, I'll be reading a little bit of a short poem, so maybe that'll be better. But, so we're going to start with a question, Karen. This question comes from Fiona. And she writes, Dear John and Hank, this summer Apple ran a promotion if you brought... Okay, so when we make the podcast, I make a lot of mistakes, and then I just say, Nick, back up. And that means Nick, the editor of the podcast, should back up, and we're going to start over. So Nick, back up. This summer Apple ran a promotion where if you bought a laptop, you got a free pair of $300 wireless Beats headphones. I needed a laptop for college, so I got a free pair of Beats. Since I spend so much time walking around campus in New York City, wireless headphones are super convenient to listen to the pod and other stuff while I walk. However, every time I wear them, I feel totally obnoxious and like I'm showing off how much money I can spend on headphones since they're so large and flashy. Nick, back up. Since they're so large and flashy, how do I wear these headphones without looking like a jerk? Okay, we got some.
Nice.
If you could bring those up, please. Thank you. We have some of these. Are you Fiona?
Okay.
Oh, God. Okay. Wow. There you
those,
go.
Those aren't that big. I mean, I was picturing like three times this size.
They're yeah, those are
nice.
Quite subtle.
Yeah, those are for New York. That's incredibly subtle.
I was
just in New York last weekend. There is no normal in New York. There is no subtle in New York.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think, well, first off, the major thing that I would do is I would get a t-shirt designed by Karen. And anytime I wore the Beats headphones, I would wear the t-shirt, and the t-shirt would just explain the situation.
It like
would
the
just
whole question.
Say, like, I got these headphones free with my computer. I didn't buy them. I'm not the kind of person who would buy these headphones. Shannon, I'm sorry. Shannon got them for free. Everyone, maybe we should make that t-shirt since everyone who has Beats headphones apparently has the same story.
Well, it'd be basically a picture of someone wearing them and say, ask me about my headphones.
Right. I'd like to tell you the entire story.
Let me tell
story.
You the story.
Yeah.
Let me explain.
I think that's the solution.
I'll get on it.
Ask me about my headphones. Yeah, other than that, I think like you said, you don't really look like a jerk in New York,
nope.
Especially when you're showing off your conspicuous consumption. Karen, would you like to read the next question?
This one right here?
Yeah.
All right. Dear Hank and John, it seems to me that eccentric people are the best kind of people. Yeah, that's true. I really admire those who have found a quirky passion and embrace it without irony or self-consciousness. I would love to be more eccentric, but the problem is I am drawn to fairly normal things like crossword puzzles and books. My question is this. Is it possible to become more eccentric on purpose? Or is true, I can't say this, eccentricity?
I think that's right.
What was that? Nick, bring it back?
Nick, back up there.
I'm going to screw it up again. Or is it true? Is true eccentricity so innate that the act of trying to be eccentric just makes you a poser? Wishing I had a freak flag to fly. Carrie. It's a deep question.
Yeah, it's deep. I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I don't think that crossword puzzles and books are the norm these days. I mean, that seems kind of like a freak flag
itself. I watched that documentary about competitive crossword puzzlers.
There's a documentary.
Oh, it's fantastic. And you do not emerge from that documentary thinking like, well, those people are putting on their eccentric airs. Yeah, I mean, I feel like you can be nerdy about almost anything.
Yeah.
It's for me, nerdiness is not so much what you're into, but the way you're into it.
It's the level of your passion for it, I think.
Right, and that ability to not be embarrassed about your passion. Like, not try to couch it in irony.
Proud of your freak flag.
Yeah, I think you do have a freak flag to fly, Carrie.
Yeah.
Get really into crosswords. I believe in you. I think she can do it. But I do think there is nothing worse than being eccentric on purpose.
Yeah, there's nothing subtle about that. You can pick those people out of a crowd.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. All right, we got another question. This one comes from Zena. This is a question near and dear to my heart since my brother's not here. Dear John and Hank, my sister has just moved out to go to university in Berlin. Obviously, she couldn't take all of her stuff with her as the room she is going to live in is very small. My question is all of what she has left behind now mine? She clearly has no use for it anymore, so I'm thinking, why should I not be allowed to inherit the things? Because she's not dead, Zena. She went to college.
That is spoken like a true older brother. Isn't possession 9/10 of the law?
No. No. I know in podcasts I'm supposed to yes and you, but no. Here's my story about when I went to college. Beginning in the year 1983, I started collecting baseball cards. And I was a very passionate baseball card collector. I was a huge fan of the Chicago Cubs. I watched between 100 and 130 Chicago Cubs games on TV every year when I was like 5 and 6 years old. I had all the baseball cards. I had a Carl Yastrzemski rookie card. I had so many great baseball cards. I had an Andre Dawson rookie card, mint condition. I had, what I would do is every year, whatever team won the World Series, I would put all of the starting lineup for the winning game on a page of my baseball card collection. And so you could flip through and you could see who, you know, was in the starting lineup for every World Series winner. And then after those would come all the Cubs because they never won. And
this year,
I don't know. I've learned not to hope. So this is what happened. I came home one summer from college, and I went to look at my 5,000 or 6,000 baseball cards, and they weren't there. And I was like, what happened to my baseball cards, Hank? And he said, and I swear to God, I'm quoting him directly, I sold them on eBay.
Okay, I didn't see that coming. Seriously?
Yeah.
Hank.
And then I was like, well, then where's my money? And he was like, it's my money. I inherited your baseball card collection when you went to college.
All right.
I mean, you have two kids. Tell me what your approach would be in this situation as a mother.
Oh, I mean, on the one hand, it's pretty smart of the younger one
no.
to make a quick buck. I mean, I got to admire his, you know, go get it, you know. But
yeah.
As the oldest of three kids, I would kill my brother and sister. So I don't know how Hank is still living.
I'm still mad about it. It's such a Hank thing to do, too, to be like, well, these baseball cards aren't the money that they could be. Why don't I turn them into money?
I love that you're still mad about it, too, because my sister still brings things up. I mean, 30 years ago, I can't believe you did this to me. I was like, I was 10.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but he wasn't 10.
Well, Hank has a childlike air about him, so...
It's true. That's a terrible point.
Sorry.
Oh, man. Yeah. Zena, that is not your stuff. Karen thinks it might be your stuff.
It's debatable.
All right. This question comes from Camilla. Possibly Camila. I'm not very good at pronouncing. Oh, you want to ask this one?
Why don't you ask this one? I'll do it.
Yeah. All right.
Dear Hank and John, some close relatives of mine recently got a puppy. The problem is that they gave this puppy a name that is also a nickname my family uses for me. It is a very obvious short version of my full name, and I was very annoyed and hurt by this.
Camo?
Yeah, what is
Cam?
Cam? Cammy?
Cammy. Cam, definitely Cammy.
Cammy,
I don't. Why did I go to Camo first?
I don't know. I don't know whether my relatives simply haven't noticed the obvious similarities between the two names or if they just don't care. Either way, I find it difficult to accept that a nickname that I'm very fond of and have had my entire life will now be forever associated with a dog. I might have to stop using the nickname altogether because asking them to change it is out of the question, and I feel like this is unfair. Some dubious advice on how to deal with this situation would be greatly appreciated. Best wishes.
Probably Cammy.
Cammy? So we were talking about this, is my son's name is James, and when he was a baby, we started calling him the Peach because he had Peach Fuzz and James and the Giant Peach, and it stuck. So maybe it's not Cammy. Maybe it's something that's
maybe
completely...
Maybe it's Peach, yeah.
Maybe it's Peach.
Yeah, that a little-known sequel that Roald Dahl wrote, Cammy and the Giant Peach. It's a good one. But would you name your dog Peach?
No, that would be a really cute name for a kitten. I mean, it would.
It's a great cat name. It's a great
Peach.
Cat name.
But no.
Yeah, you can't.
You can't.
You can't.
You can't do it.
I mean, my parents had a dog named Maggie, which is also a human name, but we don't know anyone named Maggie, obviously, because that's horrible. I think, like, that's very... I don't have any dubious advice except that to say that you are definitely in the right, in my opinion.
I sympathize.
And this person who did this to you, that's just not cool. I will say, when you say in the email, let me find the line, that this name you've had for your entire life will forever be associated with a dog, you might be slightly exaggerating... the extent to which this dog is going to impact your life. Like, if you don't live with this dog, if you think about a dog you don't, like, close your eyes and think about the dog that's closest to you that you don't live with. It's probably not a super important dog. You know? For me, anyway. I literally cannot think of a dog I don't live with.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, and
nope.
I can't.
That one, my brother's dog, nope, no, has died. Well, it's a comedy podcast about death.
That's,
it is very sad,
it's
though.
It's too soon.
It's very sad.
It's too soon.
It is too soon. It's always going to be too soon.
I drew a picture of Lemon, right?
Oh.
In the wizard school, and it was very sad when I did that.
Oh, God, yeah. That's so
I'm
sad
sorry,
and sweet.
It was
it will be available soon at dftba.com. And that's just, it's the kind of drawing that you don't want to live without, and for $30, you won't have to.
Nice segue. Very subtle.
Oh, man, so we've made it like a year, Karen, for a little bit of context, without having any proper sponsors. But we're starting to get sponsors reaching out to us, and just... Y'all probably don't know this, but my brother will not let me sell out. It's so annoying. I've been trying to sell out since 2007. Carl's Jr. offered us $5,000 to eat a Carl's Jr. hamburger in a Vlogbrothers video, and I was like, yes. And Hank was like, those are disgusting. And I was like, I don't care. Probably shouldn't have told that story. Nick, you might want to roll that back. Yeah. It's up to you, though. And he won't let me do it, but I'm trying to insert as many DFTBA product placements as I can into the show. All right, since he's not here. Okay, Karen, I have another question for you. This one comes from Name Pending, who asks, Dear John and Hank, if I wanted to start writing under a pseudonym, how does that work? Do I need to create a whole backstory for the life of that person, including a fictitious family?
Yes.
I think of author bios on a book. Do I just make it all up?
Yes.
Also, do you just pretend this is a real person, or do you have to tell strangers that it's a pseudonym? What if you pick a different gender, but then become super famous and people want to interview you? Won't they feel deceived, or can you still never tell them and just decline all in-person interviews?
Yes.
So you know pseudonymous people.
I do. That was one of the... I belong to an artist group, and a lot of us have debated this back and forth about whether or not to have a pseudonym as an artist name or your own name, and they both come with pros and cons. Definitely, social media and the loss of privacy is making a whole person up. I mean, are you really John Green?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now I'm questioning everything.
No, if I could go back, I might not be, though. Like,
yeah,
if I could
I'm
go
not
back,
sure if
I might,
would.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there... The nice thing, artist pseudonyms are often, like, obviously pseudonyms, you know? And there's no, like, backstory to their lives. Like, you know, they're usually not names.
Yeah, my friend Crystal's is Bambuda, which you should Google Bambuda, because she's really talented.
Right. So, like, but nobody thinks, like, Bambuda is the person's real name. So I think that kind of pseudonym is good. And then other than, the one thing I'll say is I don't like it, this may be a personal thing, but I don't like it when male writers especially take on female pseudonyms, because I feel like it's a way of trying to skirt around questions that they need to be addressing directly. I don't know if that's right, but it's always made me a little bit uncomfortable. Whereas, like, when Nora Roberts has that J.D. Robb, I don't know if you guys like Nora Roberts, but I'm a huge fan. She's a romance writer, but she also writes legal thrillers under this name, J.D. Robb. That's not weird to me because, because that's the way that institutional sexism works.
Well, when I first started... when I first started subbing work to sites and things, I took a page out of J.K. Rowling's book and subbed everything as Kay Hallian.
Mm,
and a lot
right.
of people thought that I was a guy.
Sure.
Everything on now
Kevin?
Is Karen Hallian, but Kevin... Kenneth?
Kenneth Hallian.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and now I know when Kenneth Hallian blows up online, I'm going to
know
exactly who that
yeah.
is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think, I mean, that's something that a lot of women writers do, especially when they're first getting published. Because there is, I mean, there, it's not really, this. It's talked about as if it's a politicized thing, and of course it is political, but... like sexism exists in publishing and in most other fields.
In art.
And art, yeah. I mean, and it does affect, affects people's lives.
Yeah.
That's the way that it works. It's not like a vague problem or just a political problem. It's also a personal problem in everybody's real life.
No, I was told by a few artists who were unhappy I kept getting printed at a certain site that it was because I was a girl and they were choosing Twitter.
The only reason. Many advantages to being a
words.
Female artist.
Yeah. Yeah. Different words than girl, but yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's there. No, it's...
But it is. It's there.
It's there.
So anyway, name pending. Do definitely invent an extremely complicated backstory.
If you're going to do it right.
Yeah, and not like a human backstory either, but like a radioactive spider level thing where like something happened to you and you were one person and then you became somebody else. And maybe it's even a thing where like David Levithan's book Every Day, where you inhabit a different body each day. So every day you have a new pseudonym. I don't know, but it's got to be extreme.
Well, then you do that, and then you write that story, and then it's your autobiography.
Yes. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
So meta, I don't even know what it means.
Really love it. Inception.
All right. We had to get to this question. Guys, this is a difficult one. I don't want to sugarcoat it, make it seem like it's not going to be hard to talk about. This is from Alyssa, and she writes... Dear John and Hank, in college, I volunteered to be a model for an ad campaign for the university, and I was told to wear the clown costume I wore for a theater production I was in, since everyone in the shoot would be wearing crazy costumes. Now, I want to pause here, Karen, and quickly discuss, in that situation, would you have agreed to go to the shoot?
Wear a clown costume? Clowns are scary.
Very scary.
No.
Deeply scary.
No, I'm terrified of clowns.
Yep.
Uh-uh.
No, no.
Mm-mm.
I would never have... I can not imagine a set of circumstances that would result in me being in a clown costume.
A dare that you lost to Hank.
I mean, no, I think I would just like... I think I would just be like, I lose.
No.
yeah, I mean,
not to give Hank any ideas.
Oh God, that would be the worst.
Sorry.
I just don't.
I feel like I need to represent Hank.
Yeah.
Here.
So. No, you're doing a great job. All right. Unfortunately, it gets worse. On the day of the shoot, I realized that I was the only one wearing a costume.
That's the worst.
They even gave me a laptop to hold so I could look more casual.
A clown with a laptop is just. So creepy.
The ad became a group shot of normal students and then me as a clown. It gets so much worse. A life-size version of this ad has been up in the San Antonio airport for over 3 years. Brothers, how do I convince the good people of San Antonio that I am not a crazy clown lady? Alyssa.
I think possibly writing in and telling us this so that now everybody knows was not the right way to go about it.
Oh, yeah.
Out there. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you what. Every listener to Dear Hank and John is booking a flight to San Antonio right now.
Taking a selfie with that. You're right.
We have a picture here.
We're going to have more soon.
And I would like to tell you that it is not terrible. But I can't.
You can't lie. Don't lie.
This is a very bad situation that
really?
Alyssa is in, guys. This is very dark.
To be fair, clown makeup covers, I mean... She's not.
Unfortunately, Karen, she's not in clown makeup. She's just wearing
God.
The clown costume.
It's a black and white, so, it's awkward.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious solution
change
is... Change names, plastic surgery, some kind of face-altering plastic surgery.
Yeah.
But then I think the obvious thing
or
is...
Or embrace it.
What?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say, or just embrace it. Create
Own
a Facebook
it.
Fan page
Own
for
it.
This clown.
Well, I'm referring to this as the Ken Bone strategy.
Oh, God.
Where everybody's like, well, you're a nerd. And he's like,
yes.
Yup. I think embracing it,
yeah.
That's a strong strategy.
Yeah, Twitter feed.
Oh my
Instagram.
God.
Everybody posts their selfies with it on Instagram and tags her.
Right.
Do it.
Yeah, just own it.
And then what were you saying? Hank wants you to get sponsors?
Right. Yeah, we can have this college. Trinity University in San Antonio. That's where one of my cousins went there. Oh. Boy, that is a bad picture. We'll post it on the Patreon.
Oh, God. That's so mean.
Well, she sent in the picture. I mean,
I know.
It's just a very bad situation. And when she says life size, she means life size.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It's creepy. I can't imagine walking. It's in the airport? Did you
say
airport?
Yeah. I mean, also, how is that a good advertisement for your university?
How does
that
happen?
Like, you'll love going to college here. There's seven students and a clown.
That's not good.
One other option that occurred to me just now is, what if Alyssa just leaves her whole life behind, gets a pseudonym, moves to Finland, starts over, just like straight from scratch.
Writes a book
under the new pseudonym. Has
to
a
be
whole
name
new
pending?
Life.
Where is that? Name pending.
Mm-hmm. Name pending is not a terrible pseudonym.
No, I like that actually. Yeah. It's pretty good.
Oh, God. I'm so upset.
Yeah. It's a good thing you're going to post that on Patreon.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you can subscribe to Dear Hank and John for as little as $1 a month. Okay, we have an actually serious question. This one comes from Jasmine, who writes, Dear John and Hank, I, like many people, am very interested in and saddened by the global wealth disparity and poverty in the developing world. What I hear most is that poverty, or perhaps extreme poverty, is living on less than $1 a day. American currency is often very strong globally, which makes me wonder if this $1 a day is a fair line in countries where their currency is very weak in comparison to the U.S. dollar. For example, my sister went to China recently and reported spending less than 10 cents on a bottle of water, something that would cost $7 to $10 here at home. Where do you live?
New York.
Yeah. It's still $7 for a bottle of water.
Yeah, that's close to, yeah.
If I'm getting a $7 bottle of water, I wish to be able to swim in it.
Boston, too, is pretty.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, in Indianapolis, a bottle of water is about 10 cents. We've got Shanghai prices. I feel like when talking about poverty, there is no reference point other than the another country's currency. So this is a really interesting and important thing to understand when we talk about absolute poverty. It's usually defined as $1.25 per day, but it is measured as purchasing power, what's a measurement called purchasing power, which means that it is the equivalent to $1.25 per day in the United States. So that is the amount of purchasing power that someone living in absolute poverty has, the equivalent of what you or I could buy here in the United States for $1.25 per day. And that's why absolute poverty is so extreme. Now, there is absolute poverty in the United States. Here it's often defined as less than $2 per day, and there are more than 1 million people in the U.S. living on less than $2 a day. But it's important to understand that, because it's often portrayed as a way to get out of the poverty trap. Oh, you know, $1.25 a day goes a long way in Somalia. Well, no, it doesn't, because that's not the way that it's measured. So I just wanted to be clear about that, because I hear about that all the time, and I think it's really important to understand. And also, it's a great question. So, yeah, absolute poverty is really, really, really poor. And, yeah. All right, no jokes there.
No.
I do have a joke about this, though. Wait, I wanted to read one other question. Does anyone know what time it is? Oh, my God. Oh, Karen, there's all these things we're supposed to do.
How much time do we have?
I'm so bad at hosting a podcast. All right, so we do this thing where we say the podcast was sponsored by, and then I'll start, and then you'll do one. It's going to be easy.
Oh, God, what?
All right. Karen, this is the part of the podcast where we thank our sponsors.
Okay. I thought we didn't have sponsors.
It's a great point.
I mean... times.
It's a great point. We don't.
Okay.
I'd like to thank our actual sponsors, but they don't exist, so instead we thank a bunch of fictional sponsors. So, for instance, I'm going to start by saying that I would like to thank...
Don't pick the clown one, because I'm going to pick that one.
Yep.
Damn it, don't... If I find it first...
All right, yeah. Today's podcast is brought to you by these amazing Beats headphones. These brilliant Beats headphones, $300 or free. And then you just say, today's podcast is brought to you by clowns or whatever.
I was going to go with Trinity.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's great.
Is that good?
Yeah,
is that okay?
That's awesome.
What was it? Bob's Burgers? No. What does Hank want to...
Bob's Burgers? Oh, Carl's Jr.?
Carl's Jr. We don't... We don't have that in New England.
It's in half the country it's Hardee's, and in half the country it's Carl's Jr. It's the same disgusting burger regardless.
All right, so today's podcast is brought to you by the clowns of Trinity University. Take that as you will.
Oh, man, yeah, we're so grateful to Trinity University for their continuing sponsorship of our podcast. I mean, they're spending money on that San Antonio airport ad.
How is that still there?
How?
Can you imagine flying into that and seeing that? I mean, I would turn right back around.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the problems with this is that you want to minimize somebody's feelings of public embarrassment in this situation, but you can't really, because if you're walking in the airport and you glance over, you don't ever think about the ads in the airport.
No.
But you're going to think about that one. You know, like, you're going to look over there and you're going to say, oh, whoa, no. Anyway, I think actually there is a little bit of dubious advice. No,
I was just going to say, I feel like we're validating her suffering.
Oh, yeah, hopefully. Yeah, yeah. We want to, like, Alyssa, obviously, this is not her fault.
No.
Except.
Well, she did put the costume on.
Maybe, just to be safe. You should never put on a clown costume.
I really hope you lose a bet to Hank.
No,
really,
no.
Really.
I mean, that's all.
Hank.
That's no. It's not on there. Hank. It's not on the docket, guys. I'm never getting in a clown costume.
It really. I mean, I am an artist.
Oh.
I have drawn you before, in fact.
I'll have no control over whether I get in the clown costume. You've drawn me as a centaur.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
You had the cutie mark, remember? I don't know if you've seen it yet or not. It's a character in Wizard School.
Yeah.
Has Hank cleared this with you?
No.
Okay, good. Good job, Hank. The cute, you know the My Little Pony have those cutie marks?
Sure, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was the little...
I got one of those on my hind.
Yep.
Great. You know what? On second thought, maybe don't buy Wizard School.
I'll post that.
All right. I want to get to one more question before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. But
Wimbledon
I don't
is
know.
Tennis, right?
No.
No? Is it racing? What is it?
You know what's great? You know what's great about this? Like, you guys are like, oh no, John's feelings are hurt. But in fact...
You're happy to educate me, aren't you?
Yes.
Yep. I know.
Anytime anybody's like, Wimbledon, what's that? I'll be like, do you have 20 minutes? I would like to talk to you about the greatest sports story you've ever heard.
I don't know. I'm from Boston.
Oh.
Oh, come on, the Sox, are you kidding me?
Great,
when they won the World Series,
it's a
are
great
you kidding
story.
Me?
No, it's
the
a
greatest
great
sports story ever told. Are
no,
you kidding me?
It's a
you
great
can't even
story.
Look at me right now and
I
say
can't.
That.
It's a great story. The Red Sox are a great story. It hurt my feelings that their curse was broken and the Cubs wasn't, but I was very happy for them. One of my cousins is a huge Red Sox fan. But the AFC Wimbledon story is just in a different league. Okay. If you got 45 minutes after the podcast, I'll tell you all about it. All right. Or just watch the movie in a couple of years.
Hopefully. There's a movie.
Well, Rosianna and I are making it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
We talked a real movie studio into letting us make the AFC Wimbledon movie.
Nice. That's awesome.
This episode of Dear Hank and John is brought to you by Blue Land. The inside of your toilet is gross, and that's why you shouldn't let anyone in your household drink out of it, including your dogs, please. They let them close the thing, let them drink out of the bowl. The toilet is where the poop goes. There is an easy way to clean your toilet, though. Blue Land's sustainable toilet cleaner tablet. Just drop it in, watch it fizz, brush it up, and then flush. It's super easy, and the great thing about Blue Land is they are figuring out how to do all this stuff without any plastic at all. Blue Land is on a mission to eliminate single-use plastic by reinventing cleaning essentials to be better for you and for the planet, and with the same powerful clean that you're used to. It uses no single-use plastics in any component, from bottles, tablets, to wrappers, and even to shipping. The tablet packaging, by the way, is fully compostable. Blue Land products are effective and affordable. The toilet tablets are proven to work on a range of toilet stains, including rust, mineral deposits, limescale, and hard water. And look, when it comes to me, I don't really care that much about bacteria in the toilet, because again, that's where the poop goes. That's where it's supposed to be dirty in there. But it is nice to have something to help you with those mineral deposits, which we have in abundance in Montana. You can get even more savings by buying refills in bulk or setting up a subscription. Their subscriptions are customizable and convenient, so you never run out of your most used products. We have been a Blue Land household for like 3 years now. It's super convenient, super good. Like it a lot. The products look nice. They're easy to use. And again, they do not require single-use plastics or shipping a bunch of water around, because it's like the stuff that's going to be in the water, you can just dissolve it in water yourself instead of having the companies ship water from place to place. Why are we doing this? Never do I think to myself, oh, this is less effective than other cleaning products. It's just not. It's effective, it's easy, and it's affordable. Blue Land has a special offer right now for our listeners. You can get 15% off your first order by going to blueland.com/dearhank. You don't want to miss out, everybody. blueland.com/dearhank for 15% off. That's blueland.com/dearhank to get 15% off.
All right. This is our last question before we get some questions from our listeners here today, and the news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon. It comes from Freya, who writes, "Dear Hank and John." Nope. "Dear John and Hank. I'm dating this guy, and he's recently told me that he wants to be one of the people who goes on Elon Musk's Mars mission. How do I convince him that this is a terrible idea? I really like him, and I would like to carry on dating, but Mars is probably too far away for a long-distance relationship. And I'm not going to Mars with him because it is a cold, dead rock. And I have no idea why anyone would want to go there. Freya, you are a person after my own heart." Karen, how do you convince your boyfriend not to go to Mars?
Well, I mean, I was dating long distance from California to Boston, and I convinced him to move to Boston recently. So I think that he's going to stay. So how do you convince him not to go to Mars? I mean, Mars is kind of cool.
No.
I mean.
All right, let me back up and ask you another question. Do you have any advice for that sort of cross-continent long-distance relationship?
Oh, God, it's really hard. We Skyped every night for 11 o'clock and him 8 for the whole, like, an hour a night. Like, that was how we kind of made it work, and lots of traveling. But it was rough. Yeah,
it's
it was
hard.
Really rough. It was worth it, but it was really, really rough. I guess the best thing we had was communication, like constant communication, and you have to trust them completely. But
yeah.
Mars, I don't know what the time difference would be for that.
That's a great question.
I mean, would they be years ahead of you? Or behind? Are you traveling in the future? I mean, what is...
If only we had a science person to answer that question.
Do they have Skype?
Well, according to the Martian, kinda. But as I recall, Mars is like several light minutes, maybe? Is it? Oh, yeah. Some one of you probably knows science. Mars is several light minutes away, right? Like between... But doesn't it depend... Yeah, it depends on how, it depends on where we are. That's why we can only go to Mars in odd-numbered years. Which, by the way, wait, if you can only make a space adventure in odd-numbered years, that's not a risk we're taking. This is the best scenario. You have to wait 2 years to get picked up. And in the worst scenario, you know, you're a corpse on Mars. And then, like, people of the distant future will be like, how did this one corpse get to Mars? And they'll, like, they'll imagine a civilization that never existed when it was really, it was just you. Use anthropologists? Oh, confused anthropologists,
confused
yes.
Confused anthropologists.
Yeah, first off, I don't think this is going to be a huge problem for Freya, because I suspect that by the time this Mars mission actually goes in 2028 or later, the relationship will have gone one way or the other.
Yeah,
you know?
I'm pretty sure.
And if it's a marriage or it's a real long-term committed thing, hard to imagine.
Well, I mean, if they just started dating and he's already thinking about moving light years away, that possibly...
Light minutes.
Possibly the relationship isn't going anywhere. But, oh, I'm sorry, though. I feel bad. No, I feel bad. But
I mean, that's not a bad point, though. I feel like if Sarah came to me and she said, I want to go to Mars, that would be a big red flag.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's, you know, code for something.
Right. Yeah, no, I would definitely be super alarmed.
I mean, I'm thinking that the dating scene on Mars is not something to be worried about, though. I mean...
Maybe, on the other hand, you know, when you're in a real intense situation with just four or five people.
Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah, sure.
You know? Did you ever see the movie Speed?
Oh, God, I love that movie. I love that movie so much.
I know.
I've watched that so many times.
The only movie that's better is Speed 2.
Oh, God, that's so bad. It's so good. I love bad movies like that.
I do, too.
Disaster movies?
I do, too. Oh, I love a disaster movie.
I've watched, what is it? God, the one where the snowstorm hits
New
York.
Day After Tomorrow.
Oh, God, it's the
great
best
movie.
Have you seen San Andreas?
San Andreas, fantastic.
The Rock. Oh, it's so good. It's so good.
Is there a more reliable performance on Earth right now than the one consistently put in by Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
I love him so much. I love him. I can't wait for Moana.
The Rock never makes a bad movie. Sarah and I used to talk about this thing.
Well, Scorpion King.
I didn't see that.
Oh, it's...
Was it bad?
As someone who loved The Mummy,
uh-huh.
It was rough.
Oh. But I bet The Rock was good in it.
Oh, well, The Rock was great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like... an actor's only as good as his material. When Sarah and I first started dating, we talked about this thing called the standard Tom Cruise 6.8, which was that pretty much every Tom Cruise movie was a reliable 6.8. Like, you'd go to the movie theater and you'd be like, listen, I had a good time. I don't regret it. It was probably worth $8. Was it a good movie? No. Do I remember the plot? Not really. But it was incredibly enjoyable. And The Rock's like that, except instead of turning in 6.8s, he consistently turns in like 8.9s.
Yeah, I was just going to say 8.8. That's good. That's not going to translate to the podcast.
Yes, what's your question?
How do you deal with nerd competition? Because there's this kid in my English class who... Okay, we took this vocab test, and I got 19 out of 19, and I was really excited about it. And then I get to class, I'm like, Neil, what'd you get on the vocab test? 20 out of 19. And I'm like, I try my best. But how do you get better than Neil in English?
Well, I mean, I was a terrible student. So I'm probably not the most qualified person to answer this question, but I think you have to think of the long game. It's not how did you do versus Neil on the vocab test this week. It's who's going to have the better, happier, more fulfilling life in 20 years. And then, then you can like send a Facebook message to Neil and be like, what's up, Neil?
Yeah.
That's my advice.
Thank you.
Karen?
I don't know how to compete with that. See what I did there? I mean, I don't even know what to say after that. I mean, there's definitely some artists that I follow and I see what jobs they're getting, and it makes me crazy because I wanted those jobs, but I think I keep trying to remind myself that I'm competing against myself. I look at what I did a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago and see that I'm going further, and then I draw really bad cartoons for myself of those artists with in clown suits.
For sure.
To make myself feel better. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's predictably much better advice.
Thank you. So, first off, could you sign my headphones? but realistically, I'm a freshman at the University of Minnesota. So I'm planning to get a degree, an undergraduate history degree in history with a focus on the Middle East. And people always ask me, why? You're a middle-class white girl from Minnesota. What are you doing? Why are you learning Arabic? So how do I explain myself justify? I mean, I know why I'm doing it, but like, what do you think is a good explanation to placate people?
You don't need one. You're doing what you want to do. You don't need to explain yourself to anybody.
Yeah.
Ask them why they're not.
Right, yeah. Why aren't you learning
Arabic?
Why aren't
you learning Arabic?
You should be.
Yeah.
I will give you your headphones back.
Oh, thanks.
Oh.
Oh, you want me to sign them? I'll sign them.
I have a Sharpie in my bag.
This is going to be perfect. I mean, could that have gone any better? Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's so hard for you.
Nicely done.
Sorry, I had to move the mic because I'm too short.
That's okay.
So as a writer and an artist, what would your advice be to someone who like is more of a science math focused and then struggles with like writing papers or doing artistic things in school?
You want to take that one?
I don't know.
You want me to take that one?
I do, yeah.
I can't write to save my life. It's horrible. To answer an email, it takes me like an hour and a half. So my sister is my business manager. She's a writer. And I think I have learned what my strengths and my weaknesses are. And as I draw more and more every day, because I used to be an art teacher for a long time, and I used to love math when I was in school, but I'm finding as I become more and more right-brained, other skills are falling to the wayside. My spelling has become horrendous. And like I said, it takes me a long time to put words together and to write something legible. So I think that I have found people to help me in the weaknesses that I have. And I'll send, you know, if I have to answer something, and Amy will send me some interview questions, I'll do like stream of consciousness and then she'll clean it up for me and make me look good. But I think I've pretty much embraced my strengths and recognized what my weaknesses are and then get help where I need it.
Karen should have an actual advice podcast. That's very good.
I love your face is on that shirt.
I mean, I know, just, yeah, it's a little
surreal?
Weird.
I mean, that must be very... I mean, I see my art on shirts, but thank God, not my face.
Yeah.
Hi.
It is cool, though.
Yeah, it is very cool.
So Hank has talked about how he likes to ask people what their favorite bridges are. So
bridges?
The question that I am very curious about is what your favorite inanimate object is, and if it helps, mine is a coat hanger because they are the actual worst.
My favorite inanimate object?
Least favorite.
Least favorite.
Oh, least favorite.
Like, is there an inanimate object that you just abhor?
Least favorite inanimate?
This is not a very funny answer, but I have OCD and I cannot abide the
velvet microfiber textures on couches, or
this tablecloth is okay.
I checked.
Yeah, but
it's just so horrible. And I don't understand like why it's a commercially available product. Surely no one can handle being touched by that stuff. It's like being touched by a million fibers per inch. You're so conscious of the fact that it has a texture, and it's so horrible. So that. Sorry.
Need a minute?
No, I'm fine. I do. I hate it though. Like, Sarah, at this point, like, Sarah has to be like, is this an acceptable texture for this item of furniture? And I'll be like, no.
Chalk.
Oh.
I can't. I mean, I was a teacher, and if there was a whiteboard, I would use it, and if there's a chalkboard, I wouldn't touch it. And then when I was in art school and we had to use charcoal, which is not much better, or chalk, like, my fingernails are starting to just, I can't even.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not.
Terrible.
Terrible,
terrible.
Terrible. Terrible thing.
Sometimes when I was in school as a kid, I didn't really know why I did this, but I would hum very, very quietly, and I'd try to find a way to cover my ears when the chalking was happening. So I would just be like,
the sound, the feel of it, everything.
Oh, God, so bad.
Oh, the sound is so bad.
Yeah.
So my sister couldn't be here, but I'm asking on her behalf. She would like to know if you have any advice for introverts who are starting college.
Oh, God.
No.
For introverts, what was the last part?
Starting college.
Oh.
Oh, God.
That's rough.
It's terrible.
Are you an introvert?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. This is kind of rough.
Just try to find time for yourself. Try to find the quiet time that you need, and try not to feel too much social pressure to socialize when you don't feel like socializing. It's hard, but I had a hard time in college. I was very bad at it, so it's difficult for me to give advice about something that I was so exceptionally poor at doing. But yeah, I guess just like try to take care of yourself. In general, like in those stressful situations where like something's radically new, I think you just have to try to practice really good self-care.
Yeah, don't be ashamed of being introverted. You know, don't be hard on yourself and set little goals like, I'm going to go to this party for half an hour and then I'm going to reward myself with chocolate after I do it, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I'm going to have a big chocolate bar after this.
Good for you. Yeah.
That's my reward.
Would you rather have to wear a clown costume for the rest of your life or have to visit Mars?
Or have to what?
Visit Mars.
Go Mars.
I mean, one of those things would result in my certain death. Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd go to Mars.
Yeah, good choice.
Yeah, you know, as long as I could bring my hat on, I'd miss my wife, but she would leave me if I had to wear a clown costume every day, so.
Well, she didn't say you couldn't bring her.
Yeah, but realistically, I know that when I go and I say, Sarah, listen,
I lost a bet to Hank, and
I've had to make a weird choice. No real idea why this is necessary, but I either have to wear a clown costume for the rest of my life or I have to go to Mars.
What if there are clowns on Mars? We don't know. What's there? I know.
You get to Mars.
Could you imagine?
You get to Mars.
And there are clowns.
And you're like, oh, finally, some alone time. Oh, I've just been craving this. And then you get out of your spaceship, clowns everywhere.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Assimilate. You're screwed.
And then damned if you don't end up a guy on Mars wearing a clown suit. All right, we have time for a few more questions.
Okay. I was going to ask you if you had any other great, terrible disaster movie options. If assuming bad disaster movie date night.
Oh, so many.
Oh, yeah, I mean, it would have to be like bad disaster movie weekend.
I mean, well, the, the two volcano ones, which one do you like better? Volcano or what is the other one? Yes. I mean, this is everything.
Volcano is a great movie. I'd go Volcano,
yeah.
I think.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, he's great in that.
Oh, when the guy goes into the lava.
Tom Cruise movie.
War of the
Worlds. War of the Worlds.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Love that one.
Standard Tom Cruise 6.8. there's that great... There are those two great movies, the Meteor Impact movies.
Armageddon and Deep Impact.
And
Deep Impact was depressing. Armageddon is just popcorn movie. Deep Impact was pretty depressing.
Yeah, I don't like it when they get too real.
They got a little deep.
Yeah,
deep.
Don't tell me what it's actually going to be like.
Yeah. Yeah, in the title.
It's true.
Yeah. Any more comments? 2012?
2012 is a terrible movie, but it is a disaster movie.
So bad. I love that movie.
Yeah. No, so it's delicious. It's delicious. What?
The core. Oh, when they drill down because they have to restart the core of the Earth. You haven't seen that?
No.
Oh, it's Hilary Swank. Hilary Swank. Oh, you gotta. It's so good. How have you missed that one?
How did Hilary Swank go from Million Dollar Baby to the core?
Oh, so good. They have to jumpstart the core of the Earth.
Sure, of course they do. Otherwise, how's it going to keep spinning?
Oh, my God. So good.
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, Sharknado. Sharknado was fun to watch live and watch the Twitter feed.
Yeah,
that
Sharknado,
was what made that fun.
Sharknado was only good on Twitter. And
yeah, it was good on Twitter.
And then, like so many things, then when they went back to the well, it got worse and worse and worse. I will give a shout-out for what I believe to be the best action movie of all time, which is Die Hard 4. I just think it's like a...
Which one? Was that when he had a kid?
No, it's got Justin Long, the guy who plays the Mac in the Mac commercials.
Doesn't he have a daughter, though?
Oh, yeah, he's got a kid, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like the one before it was Samuel L. Jackson.
That is also a great movie.
That was a good one.
The weird thing about Die Hard movies is that it was the first one, which was great. There was the second one, which was okay. There was the third one, which was great. The fourth one, which I think is the greatest movie of all time. And then the fifth one, which is
There's a fifth one? I don't think I even saw that one.
It's so bad. It's unenjoyable.
All right, well, you need to watch The Core.
Okay, and you'll
watch
Die Hard.
And I'll watch that one, yeah, and then we'll trade notes.
All right. That's our advice.
Beautiful, thank you.
Okay, what is your favorite Pokemon? Both what would you pick as a starter in original Pokemon, and what is your favorite of the 151 originals?
Are you on Pokemon Go?
Oh, yeah.
What level, what level are you?
25.
I am, yes! Too.
Really?
I am. But how
what
far
team?
Into 25?
Team
Mystic.
I'm team red.
Yes! Wow!
You just made my day.
my heart.
What is your favorite? What would you pick as your starter?
Oh God. Well, my son picked my starter for me, and I think he picked Pikachu. But I could be. Was he a starter?
Yeah.
I'm new to Pokemon in the last like 6 months.
You can hack it to make Pikachu.
Oh.
Pikachu's possible. We started with Squirtle. My favorite Pokemon to have, I was in England for 6 days. I spent, I don't want to tell you how much money on data to catch a stupid Mr. Mime, which you can only catch in Europe. It's the only one you can catch only in Europe. And on my sixth day, I took a 5 mile long walk along the river. And at no point did I look up to see the sights. I was just tracking Mr. Mime. And then he showed up right outside the Tate Modern. And it took 20 Ultra Balls.
Oh. And 20, and he didn't run?
And 20 Raspberries. He didn't run. It
wow.
was it was an epic battle. He was staring me down. The most horrifying, ugly Pokemon. It's essentially the clown Pokemon.
Oh.
And I was sweating. It was the most intense fight I've had since middle school. And when I caught him, when it said gotcha, I thought I was going to start crying. And then I sent Sarah a bunch of screenshots, and she was like, I don't care.
I don't have an epic story like that. No. I wish I did. I have a little sentimental one. My son Ryan's favorite animal is a tiger, so he likes the...
Growlithe?
Yes. So I have two of them, and one of them I named Ark Orion, and the other one is named for my youngest son, who wants to be just like his older brother, so he likes tigers too, James Lith. So those are my two. I know. They're very cute.
That's a very cute story. Yeah. All right, I apologize to everybody whose questions we're not going to get to, but this is going to have to be the last one, I think. Sorry.
So my friends and I have had a question that we've been debating for 10 years. This was pre-Hamilton, so don't let that impact your answer too much. But we wondered what you consider to be the foxiest founding father.
All right. So, what is considered the founding fathers?
We have gotten Abraham Lincoln as an answer, so he's not a founding.
No,
father.
He's not a. Yeah. No. He's a good guy, but
yeah, also not foxy, really.
Well, I mean, he's tall. Some girls like that.
Yeah, he was tall.
He was tall.
He did also say, "If I had two faces, would I be wearing this one?"
Ooh.
I guess for me, you got the, it's a tough one.
I can't get Hamilton out of my head.
Yeah, I mean, because Hamilton is so
hot. That's really, really.
I just.
All I can see is Daveed Diggs dancing as Jefferson.
Jefferson's also very hot, yeah.
Is Daveed Diggs a founding father? Can I pick him?
God. Yeah. This is tough. This is tough. This is real tough. And then I'm trying to reach and come up with some more obscure founding fathers, but like looking at them, I'm not thrilled with any of them in my mind.
Yeah. Franklin had very good calves.
Franklin was like 87 years old. I'm going to go with Hamilton. I think I would have picked Hamilton pre-Hamilton.
Okay. What about you, Karen?
I mean, I don't want to copy him, but I'm going to go with Hamilton, too. Yeah, I mean, if in the musical Hamilton, it would be all Daveed Diggs, but I'm thinking the real ones, Hamilton.
All right. Yeah. One more question.
Hi. I'm really nervous now. I'm asexual and aromantic, and it can kind of be awkward if I'm hanging out with like my friends who have significant others. I feel like I'm third wheeling like all the time. Do you have any Aero Ace friends, and do you have any advice for couples to kind of interact with people who choose to be single?
Yeah, we do have an ace friend who we hang out with sometimes. We don't socialize much because we have young children. So.
I was just going to say, I don't really ever go out anymore, so...
Yeah. Of all my friends, whenever I talk about any of my friends, I'm like, we hang out sometimes, you know, like 4 times a year.
Conventions. When I go to conventions, that's the only time I have a social life.
Yeah.
Really, that's it. At home, I don't.
And I guess, I mean, the main thing, I guess in this, I have very limited experience in this, but the only thing I'd say is that... it's not, as a person who's in a couple, it's not uncomfortable for me to be in those situations. Like, I don't feel like you're third wheeling, if that makes sense. Like, if when we're hanging out with a single friend, I don't ever feel like they're incomplete, you know, or that they're not like pulling their weight or whatever. Because in many cases, when people, you know, have a partner, you don't like the partner nearly as much as you like your friend.
Yep.
So it's sort of worse.
Yeah.
Sometimes, at least, you know, and then you have to just be like, oh, God. That guy's going to be there. Wish there was a way to hang out with that guy without hanging out with that other guy. Hope the friend I'm thinking about doesn't...
It's like, don't say any names.
Doesn't listen to the pod too much. Oh, apparently you have 15 minutes left. Shoot.
Is that more than you thought or less?
That's more than I thought.
Oh.
That's good, though. We'll get to a couple more questions. So, yeah, I guess that's what I would say, like, is that, and maybe also just acknowledge it. Sometimes things are uncomfortable because we don't talk about them. And then when you acknowledge them, they become easier. But, yeah. I don't know. It's pretty dubious advice.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Ryan.
Hi. Oh, no way. Is it really?
No.
Oh. All right, let's... quickly, Karen. There's this person named Ryan who wrote in and went... Sorry, I'll tell you all. When this person, Ryan, wrote in, they said their name, Ryan, like six different times in the email, but then I also added it six more times, and so people often call themselves Ryan.
It's a good name. What's
going on, Ryan?
Yesterday, you talked about the trolley problem when you were talking about the end of the Fault in Our Stars. So what are your thoughts on the trolley problem? What would your solution be?
Do you know what this is?
On the what?
Yeah. The trolley problem?
The trolley problem?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I thought you said Trump problem, and I was like, let's not do that.
Oh, trolley. Thank God we haven't had a question
about that.
No, I was
going to say, don't, let's not. Trolley problem?
Sorry, you made me think about Trump.
I know, I'm sorry. I'm really, really sorry. I know, it was a nice hour where
there was no... The trolley problem, I always get it wrong, so I'm just going to tell you guys the wrong trolley problem, because I always get it wrong. Basically, there's three people tied to the tracks, and then there's... Yeah. Right. Let's say there's three people tied to the tracks.
This is a hypothetical, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
And there's a trolley coming. It's definitely going to run them over. You can pull a switch that will send the trolley to a different path, but then it will run over two people, and you can see those two people. And also you have to pull the switch to have it go, and then what do you do? Most people make the passive choice, believing that it's not a choice, that they don't become a participant in this... hypothetical murder. I mean, the good thing about the trolley problem, right, is that most of us probably are never going to find ourselves in a situation where we can do that. But then on some level, like, we're always constantly making decisions, passive decisions that, are probably not in, like, the broad interest of the human species, but are in the interest of, like, the people close to us, which is what the trolley problem is, or one of the things that it's about, I guess. I do not have a solution for it.
Is The Rock available in this scenario? Because that's my solution. He would get them all, right? And then stop the trolley.
Oh, my God, he would. He would get them all, and then he would just be like, ksh.
Yeah.
Do you know The Rock eats 6 pounds of cod every day?
Oh, I follow him on Instagram. Yeah, okay. I know.
Yeah. He's just an amazing person.
He is.
Do you know that... You know... So when you do press junkets, it's a weird, horrible... I don't want to, like, complain about... movie stuff, but press junkets are pretty, it's as bad as movie stuff gets. And basically you sit in a room, in a very small hot room, and every 6 minutes a different reporter comes in and interviews you, and it's totally dehumanizing for everyone involved, and you cannot think about the reporter, and they ask you the same questions over and over again, and it's almost impossible to think of these reporters as like people because you're so nervous about saying something wrong and getting in trouble or whatever, and it's just like and it goes on for hours, so you meet hundreds of these people. When I did the Paper Towns tour, I think I did like 500 press junket interviews, and it's I'm not The Rock. When The Rock does it for like Fast and Furious 7, it goes on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. But The Rock is amazing.
And he really is.
Everyone I've ever talked to in the press, they're all like, you know who's great? The Rock. He's so nice. He's so caring. And I saw this YouTube video. You can look it up. It's pretty amazing. This guy interviews The Rock every time The Rock has a movie out, and The Rock remembers him every time. And they always do something like fun and cool together. And to surprise him, The Rock officiated his wedding.
Stop it. Of course he did.
You know, people say we live in a post God world, but maybe not.
I love him.
I know, God.
Have you met him?
Oh no. No, I couldn't bear to.
I was hoping
to.
I was 2 steps like the Kevin Bacon game.
Wait,
like,
a
if you had
second.
Met him, then maybe I'd be
I
2 steps
I
away.
I did meet him.
Yes.
I think he gave me an MTV Movie Award.
You have an MTV Movie Award, really?
I do.
Do you really? That's cool.
Funny story about it, actually. We won, The Fault in Our Stars won the MTV Movie Award for Movie of the Year, which was really cool. And but I didn't get an award like the director did. I mean, you know, to be fair, I also didn't have anything to do with making the movie. So I probably didn't deserve an award. But, you know, the director got one and the actors got one and the producers got one and I didn't get one. And then I called the producer of the movie and I was like, hey, can I get one of those MTV Movie Awards?
Those
and he was like, they're $300 a piece. And I was like, can I get one anyway? And he did. He got me one. But yeah, so it's in my basement. It's pretty great.
That must be pretty cool.
That is the coolest award I have. I also have a Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award.
Oh, did you get slimed?
No, I didn't get to go to the show. But it was still cool. Yeah.
That's very cool.
Those are the two weird things that happened to me.
That's awesome.
I hope we answered your question.
The trolley question?
Oh, yeah, we did.
The Rock.
Yeah, The Rock.
The Rock.
The Rock. From now on, that's the answer. The Rock.
Okay, I just wanted to remind you that you actually did plug Hardee's and An Abundance of Catherines, and I wanted to know if you were going to retroactively ask for your $5,000 or maybe for 478 Monster Thick Burgers.
Oh, God. You say you've never been to Hardee's?
We don't have them in Boston.
Well.
I don't think.
No,
not Wait, really.
Your life won't get any better. I mean, I wouldn't say that I plugged it in Abundance of Catherine so much as I acknowledged its existence.
Is that not what product placement
But there is?
Is
a, yeah, there is a weird history of this in American fiction of writers getting paid to do product placement, basically. I do not do that.
Oh, like in their books?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
In fact, there was a really interesting...
Do they have that for art?
Huh?
Sorry, go ahead. Never mind.
Yeah.
No, never mind.
She just put, like, in the background of the Wizard School art, just a bunch of Hardee's signs. Man, they're always coming from Hardee's or going to Hardee's.
See, if we'd been working on Wizard School together, that would have happened.
Yes.
But Hank, it was
Yeah, Hank wouldn't let it happen.
Mm-mm. All right, sorry.
No, I would not. I would never do paid product placement in a book. It would, I mean, that would be bad. I'm not that bad.
Hello.
Hi.
So I had an embarrassing experience yesterday where I was volunteering for the writers panel and I met you and Ben Blacker, John, and I got a little starstruck and forgot to tell you that although my name was not Maureen Johnson, it actually was Amy. So my question is, what is your advice for people like me who tend to freeze and make fools of themselves when encountering people who are significantly cooler than them, like you and Karen?
The first time I met him was at VidCon. Hank flew me out to VidCon to promote Wizard School, and we had just set up, and he turns the corner, and I literally was like, oh, John Green! I don't know if you even remember that.
I do remember.
Like, with bodyguards and everything. I was like, hi. I mean, this is only the second time we've met, and I'm still kind of freaking out right now.
You don't seem to be.
No, I freak out about other artists that I meet at Comic-Con. My friend, I say friend now, and I feel like I'm faking that, but Katie Cook, who's an incredible artist, the first time I met her, I think I was just starting to pursue art, and I had gone to a con just to kind of check out what it was like, and I went up to her, and I was like, oh my God, I love you so much, and you're so great, and everything. She's like, oh, I think I've seen some of your work. I have one of your shirts. I was like, And I still, I mean, I've seen her at conventions and I'm friends with her on Facebook for the last couple of years, and I still freak out when I see her, and I'm still, like, completely in with Hank. I mean, I don't know what the best, I mean, I think, but I've also been on the other side in the last couple of years. I've been lucky enough that people come up to me and they kind of get starstruck and nervous, and seeing what it feels like on the other side and knowing that there's absolutely no reason to be nervous at all. I know it doesn't help logically, like, because I'm still, but, I think I know I get completely nervous. It goes both ways. I think it's just normal. I think it's good. It means you're excited to be talking to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, I think the main thing is, like, sometimes after one of those encounters, I will, like, break it down in my head obsessively and feel like, oh, God, I was such an idiot. I was such an embarrassment. I can't believe that I said that. And they don't care. Mm-mm. They don't. They don't remember. Jeffrey Eugenides has no idea that he met me. He has no memory of meeting me. He does not care what I said. It went in one ear and out the other. That's what I tell myself anyway. Or like when I met Sherman Alexie, I was just like, hi. And yeah, I mean, it was a disaster, but like, you just gotta let it go. Gotta let it go. So I'm trying to let it go. Still. My strategy is to get in, say thank you, and get out.
Yeah.
Just get out fast. Like, treat it like a burning car, you know, where you're just...
It's also possible that I forgot to say thank you.
Indeed. That's my strategy. Thank you. I'm very sorry that we have to wrap it up now, but I'm getting the wrap it up sign from our friend in the back. I'm sorry that we didn't get to answer your question, nice person who's next in line. I apologize.
Should we give them this?
The next. You get person? This.
You get this.
Oh, that didn't go well.
All right. You tried.
What's that? Oh, this is the guy who timed to find out who talked more in the podcast with his sister. Can someone please Google the AFC Wimbledon Swindon Town score? How far in the game is it? I love you guys for caring. I love it so much. Gentle reminder that you too can become an owner of AFC Wimbledon by joining the Don's Trust for just £25, which these days is like $8.
Yeah, it's true.
So the news from AFC Wimbledon is that they are currently playing Swindon Town. Just for a little bit of context.
Yeah,
AFC
I need a
Wimbledon.
Little context.
All right, so in English soccer, there's the teams at the top. That's the Premier League. You know, like Manchester United, you ever heard of them?
Yes.
Chelsea, no. Liverpool.
Okay.
Those yeah. teams. Liverpool yep. owned by the Boston Red Sox owner, John Henry.
Yes.
And then if you're a really bad team in the Premier League, the bottom three teams each year get relegated down to the league below that, which is called, helpfully, the Championship. Right? Mm-hmm. And then the best teams in the Championship get promoted up to the Premier League each season because the worst teams from the Premier League have been relegated. The worst teams from the Championship get relegated down to the third tier of English soccer, which, and this is a totally reasonable decision, is called League One. And beneath that, you have League Two, the fourth tier of English soccer. And then beneath that, it's semi-pro/amateur.
Okay.
So these are the professional, full-time professional leagues. AFC Wimbledon is currently located happily, comfortably, right in the middle, about there. This is a very visual gag for a podcast. And they're playing Swindon Town, who's about there, just below them. And it's 0-0 at halftime. That's the update.
Okay. So because I need more context.
Great.
That's a team.
Yeah.
I thought it was a league or something. It's a team, and they play soccer.
Correct.
All right. So if you could sign this, I'm going to sell this on eBay.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you.
Of course. 2016. There you go.
Excellent. Thank you.
There you go. Maybe alternately we could give it to the best question, but if you want to sell it on eBay,
that
that's fine.
No, we could do that. Oh. Guilt me into that. All right. That's
and the good, news yeah. from the news from Mars is that Elon Musk has said that if you want to go to Mars, you should be prepared to die there.
And leave your girlfriend behind.
So he really did say that. So
did he really?
Oh yeah.
I mean, yeah, but you say it.
Right. So, yeah, right. That's one of those things that you know.
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily
but do you have
say
to really
out
articulate it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Would you ever, is there ever a world in which you would go to space?
If I didn't have kids, yes.
What
the kids
if,
keep me here, like I, but.
What if you're like 80, your kids are grown up, they've got good lives?
I'm hoping they're going to be grown up when I'm 60. How about 60?
It's a good point. Good point.
Yeah. Well, I mean, then there might be grandchildren.
It's true.
And those you get to spoil and not have to discipline, and I'm really looking forward to that.
It's true. It's true.
It's tough. If I didn't have kids, I would definitely be interested in doing much more something like that. But yeah. Those kids keep you on Earth.
I wouldn't go to space for all the money in the world.
Why?
It just sounds terrible.
I'm a little claustrophobic, so now that I think about it, possibly that
I mean,
would
I
be
get
a problem.
Nauseated just from being up on stage.
Well, that's a whole different thing. You know, everybody's looking at you.
Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome.
All right, so what did we learn today, Karen?
Well, I learned that AFC Wimbledon is a team, and they don't play tennis. So I think I'm ahead of the game this morning.
Yeah, that's true.
I learned never put on a clown suit.
Never.
Ever.
Dangerous.
Those are what headphones look like, the Beat ones.
Yeah. I was picturing something much more elaborate.
Yeah, those are not that big.
Yeah.
But I grew up in the 80s where everything was hair was... So.
Right, you like held in your huge hair with your gigantic headphones.
Oh, the Aquanet, yeah. Yeah.
And lastly, we learned... what else did we learn? Hank and I do this every week. We're like, what did we learn? What did we learn? What did we talk about today? Lastly, we learned don't name your dog Cammy.
Yeah.
Karen, thank you so much for potting with me.
Thank you for having me.
Again, you can find Karen's stuff at Etsy or all over the internet. What's your website?
KarenHellion.com.
Oh.
Works out really well.
To have a name that isn't John Green. JohnGreen.com, owned by a realtor in Southern Mississippi and
really?
Has been since like 1992. Oh. Thank you for potting with me. Thanks to everybody for your questions. You can email us at hankandjohn@gmail.com or you can also send us tweets with the hashtag DearHankandJohn. I'm John Green. Hank is Hank Green. Karen is...
Hank Green, too.
And of course, Alyssa is at Clown Alyssa. This podcast is edited by Nicholas Jenkins. Victoria Bongiorno helps out with social media. Rosianna Hals Rojas helps with many, many things, including questions. Our theme music is by Gunnarola. I love Gunnarola. Yeah, he's great. One of my favorite YouTubers. And as we say in my hometown, don't forget to be awesome. Oh, we should all do that together. Great idea. You guys are smart.
Yeah, they're wicked all smart. Right.
Here we go. Roll it back, Roll Nick. Back. And as we say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.
Great. Thank you guys so much.
Thank
this has
you.
Been such a pleasure. You can listen to it in a few weeks when Hank is on paternity leave and have a wonderful day. Thanks, Karen.